This is Robert Stark. I'm joined here with Joshua David McKinney. He's a fashion designer, illustrator, and designs dolls. Joshua, it's great having you on the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And I'm also joined here with my co-host, Pilleter.
Thanks for having me on, Robert. It's good to talk to you, Joshua.
Thank you. Nice to talk to you, too.
Joshua, can you talk about your background in art? Have you always been fascinated with dolls per se, or did you have other areas like fashion and painting that you got into first?
Dolls is actually something that I got into fairly recently, within the past 5 or 6 years. I've been drawing all my life, and particularly drawing women and drawing sort of feminine things and beauty and glamour and whimsy, that sort of thing. And I've been drawing all my life. So I moved to New York in 99 originally to study fashion design, and switched majors a lot in school and went into illustration, and then I ended up majoring in photography, and I did that for a little while, and then kind of dropped that and started doing illustration. And then I worked as a professional fashion and beauty and lifestyle illustrator for about 8 years, and then I kind of developed this interest in dolls and doll making, and it all kind of came together when I started making dolls and making my doll is called Pigeon. And my interest in photography and my interest in fashion and my interest in expressing femininity all kind of came out through this doll and sort of puppeting her in a via social media and everything. And so that's kind of how I got to where I am now. But it wasn't doll making was not where I sort of was intending my career to go, because I didn't really even know that could be a career, you know. And it's not like it's a normal sort of career. So I'm kind of carving a niche out for myself as I go. But in a nutshell, that's basically how I started with dolls and where I'm at.
Were you with the getting the ideas for dolls? Were you kind of like experimenting with different things, and then you saw something and like, oh, this looks, you put something together and like, this looks really good, I gotta go with this?
I was always really interested in sculpture and three-dimensional things, and it felt very instinctual to kind of use my hands and make something like that. But it was really when I started photographing my doll and sort of using photography to emote through this inanimate object that I really like. It was a very like a click where I was like, this is a something that I'm really resonates with me as an artist. And it really like, I just as soon as I started taking pictures of dolls, it really like the full magnitude of the expression kind of sunk in, and where I wanted to go with it. It just felt really like natural for me and what I should be doing with my particular set of gifts.
Were there any particular artists that inspired you?
As far as doll makers?
Well, doll makers and artists in general, I guess both.
Absolutely. I mean, I think I first fell in love with dolls and sort of there's an artist in Canada named Marina Bichkova who has a line of dolls called Enchanted Dolls. They're really these exquisite porcelain ball jointed dolls, and they have this very sort of like darkness and sadness to them, and they're very much for adults, and they have genitals, and they're, you know, it was a completely different concept to what a doll can be that I knew of, being raised in America and dolls being only perceived as children's toys. That when I saw her work and sort of what she was able to express and sort of how serious and how kind of sad they could be. It really, that's when I really got the urge to start making dolls myself and kind of seeing what sort of doll artist I would be. And it took me quite a long time. There's not a lot available as far as how to learn how to make dolls. You know, there's ceramic classes, and there, you know, it depends on the materials you want to use, but it's really,
do you usually use porcelain?
My first dolls were porcelain. I kind of started with a very like old, I really wanted to make sort of a very classic old-fashioned idea of a doll. So I self-taught. I bought a lot of books and watched a lot of YouTube videos and that sort of stuff, and taught myself, and bought a small kiln and taught myself how to make molds and to cast in porcelain. So my first dolls were kind of like this modern idea of what a classic fashion doll is. So she had sculpted limbs, like her hands, feet, and her head were porcelain, and then her body was fabric, which is sort of like what an old like brew doll would be, or some sort of like old fashioned type of fashion doll. But then her proportions were more like what we think of as like typical modern fashion proportions. I mean, she wasn't jointed or anything. She was a very simple sort of doll, and that's kind of how I started. And the more I made her, the more I photographed her, the more I wanted to put in different types of joints and to make her more expressive and to have her emote more. So very slowly over time, I started teaching myself how to cast in silicone, and how to cast or how to make molds in silicone, and how to cast in resin. And slowly kind of got to where I'm at now, where I'm in the past year I've started using 3D printing and taught myself how to sculpt digitally, which has really kind of been a game changer for me. It's definitely, I feel like I've my whole doll making career has sort of spanned I think I know every part of like what of doll making, how to make rag dolls, how to make porcelain dolls, how to make resin dolls, how to do rotocasting. I've kind of covered it all to get to where I'm at.
And you're also from the fashion background. I mean, how you relate the fashion to your dolls. What are some of your particular like interest in fashion and fashion designers that have inspired you?
What I make essentially is a fashion doll. So, you know, it's a type of doll that's sort of meant to evoke and express ideas about fashion. And I definitely sort of, you know, I've done a few things where I'll recreate designer looks that I'll like for her and that sort of thing. But I mean, the doll that I make, Pigeon, is also kind of a character doll in the way that like Barbie is a character doll. She has a sort of a vibe, and she has things that she would wear and she wouldn't wear. And it's very, she has her own sort of spirit. So it's almost kind of like, styling like a real person, as opposed to just having like a blank doll. I've always had this really clear idea about like who she is and the kind of things that she would and wouldn't do. So it's sometimes about picking from like designers and using, you know, trying to either recreate what they've designed on a smaller scale, but a lot of times it's just kind of about using my own fashion sense and designing for her, and kind of, you know, using different elements of things that I feel like she would wear and putting them into the dolls.
Do you know about the ball jointed dolls of Japan? There's a whole hobby of that.
Yeah.
Do you collect any of like little, do you know of like Little Miss No Name and the Blythe dolls? That's always fascinated me when I was young, when I had like some of the lowbrow magazines like Juxtapose or High Fructose, and that's why I got interested more on the background of vinyl toys. But do you have interest in like designer toys at all?
A little bit. I'm interested in designer toys in that, well, I'm not really a collector. I'm more of a maker, because I'm I have so many things that I'm constantly working on that I don't really have space. I also live in Brooklyn, New York, so I have a pretty small apartment and work studio. So
I have a whole collection. I have a whole collection of vinyl toys, but then, you know, I was influenced that I've been collecting them since I was 15. And it just started with just like one of those little, I think it was Icebox by Dalek. And I just open up these little silver little bags and just put them in my bedroom. And over time, they just accumulated. And that has a lot to do with my exposure through such like fashion, like magazines at the time I liked when I was younger. I mean, one book I'm looking at right now again before was, I think the book was called Vinyl Will Kill, and I picked it up at Urban Outfitters, and it's just a bunch of lowbrow artists at the time. I don't even think the word, I think it's more like designer toys artist, and it was like range from like, I really love Tim Biscup, and Gary Baseman, and, you know, Frank Kozik. He did the Smoking Labbit, and that's something I really like, enjoyed, where it becomes that the designer toy itself is art. And I'm getting the same vibe with the dolls you're creating. It creates something for that consumer or somebody who wants that doll and kind of represents this kind of aesthetic to it. I think there is this really fascination with dolls that's not really well talked about, or it's like really associated, I'm thinking, of the whole designer toy background.
Yeah.
What kind of personality does your doll Pigeon take on?
What kind of personality? You know, she sort of represents, you know, she's very, I feel like I'm constantly exploring that, but she, you know, she's very like young and youthful and quirky. She's evolved a little bit as I've kept making her, but, you know, I used to describe her as basically she's a girl who loves vintage clothes and vintage aesthetic and vintage silhouette, but she sort of but she's also a modern girl, and she sort of takes it and interprets it and makes it her own. And that was kind of my mission statement with her, and sort of her old body kind of spoke to that, the fact that she was made out of porcelain and had this sort of like old fashioned construction as to the kind of doll she was, but then her fashion sense and her proportions were more you know, suited to like modern sensibilities and modern aesthetic. So I still think she definitely has that sort of vibe. She's very whimsical. She's very kind of like, she likes color, pop. She likes to wear a lot of sheer things. There's bows. I mean, it's really interesting too, like creating a doll and having her be such a personal expression. And then also, I don't know if you guys have looked at her sort of Instagram feed, but she has like a pretty intense following of other young creative people that draw pictures of her and dresses her and do their makeup like her and design outfits for her. And I like to have little like contests and things from time to time to interact with people. But I really like to use Pigeon as a way to foster creativity and other young people. And I think that a doll is a really good platform to do that.
Yeah, you know, I saw someone made a mural of her. Oh, that's yours. Street art, mine, yeah, NYC.
Yeah.
Do you get commissions from your? It looks like you can get commissions to make a doll, and you use the services. Do you make them, or do you have a group of people making them? And if the commission price, does somebody get really specific with their doll and have some background on it?
Yeah, I mean, so I do like a custom doll service. So people can take a Pigeon doll and specify the complexion color and the eye color, and we make the wigs, and if they want like a particular garment, I have people that I work with, and we'll try to recreate the dolls. But they're really art pieces, you know. They're mm-hmm. each one is one of a kind. The sculpt of the doll itself doesn't change; it's always a Pigeon doll. But within that, her face is very fluid in the way that it can sort of paint up to kind of resemble different people, and it's very ethnically ambiguous, and it can kind of be a lot of things. So
it's more like,
it's
more like people get the dolls as for an art piece rather than there's this cultural like need that it represents that person's personality. I mean, do you ever have a case where it's like, I'm looking to get the perfect doll that reflects my own personality?
I think so. I mean, people certainly like to get dolls sort of styled after themselves, and you know, they'll be like, oh, I want, you know, I'm a blonde, so I want a blonde doll with, you know, my eyebrows, and she should be wearing a leather jacket because I wear leather jackets or whatever, you know. So people like to sort of model them after themselves, but it's never like a, it's not like a portrait doll either, where I'm really trying to make it look like them. It's sort of like,
yeah, because
like an avatar, sort of like a little.
Mm-hmm. I remember watching this documentary, and it was one of those strange documentaries. And the guy was called, do you know of a person named Dave Cat? Supposedly, this guy named Dave Cat, he's like an eccentric artist, but he lives alone. And so, okay, what he likes to do is he has a doll girlfriend, and he calls this girlfriend, I think she has a Twitter follower and Instagram too. I think her name is Sidoro Kuno Neko or something, some Japanese cyberpunk character that he's made up for her. And Dave Cat as this cyberpunk character, but he makes this kind of, he has this internet celebrity status with this whole doll culture too. And so it's making me think that it's not only that there's some people that will translate dolls as their significant other or they're part of their own personality, where it seems to me that,
yeah,
just,
absolutely,
it seems like you make the dolls. It's just, you, I don't think you haven't had a case where it's like Dave Cat saying, I need the perfect lover or the perfect synthetic, very, this almost science fiction cyberpunk-esque kind of thing that's happening.
Yeah. I mean, I think with my doll, and specifically because she's a fashion doll, it kind of more caters to that sort of world and the kind of person that cares about that. It's not so much about like creating like a perfect woman or the perfect doll or, I think it's more about like aesthetic and using the doll to kind of express a certain aesthetic that maybe resonates with you or that you find really moving in some way.
Yeah. I mean,
if that makes sense. A lot of your illustrations, and your illustrations influenced your dolls, but I noticed a lot of them have like a kind of either Art Deco, like 1920s to 30s aesthetic, or as well as like a Art Nouveau.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've always loved that particular period in art and sort of the golden age of illustration. You know, as I said before, before I was making dolls, I was working as an illustrator. And that was definitely sort of my style that I kind of flocked to, which was like a strong black line, very mucha, very, you know, Art Nouveau. I love organic shapes and swirls. And I still draw from time to time, and I still do illustration work as kind of like a side hustle. But it's I don't have as much time for it as I would like to, because everything I do is so 3D and doll oriented. But it's certainly something I reflect on a lot. I love that period of art and the art that was created then, for sure.
I see one illustration you did. There's like a woman in a dress, kind of doll-like, and it's of the New York skyline. You see like the Empire State Building, the Chrysler Building.
Uh-huh, yeah, yeah.
Like clouds, and then the kind of like golden lightning coming down.
Mm-hmm. That was a fashion illustration I did. The dress is a Gucci dress, and I felt that the dress was very architectural in the way that, like, very New York Art Deco sort of thing. So I love scale play. I did that illustration before I was doing dolls. That's an older one of mine, but it definitely kind of, you can see how I like to I like a doll aesthetic, and I like scale play. I mean, I think one of my favorite things about dolls and photographing dolls in a real world is like that, you know, if you have her next to a pair of scissors, it's a really big pair of scissors. Like I love things being the wrong size. And so I think my idea with her is that because I was using the Empire State Building and these sort of classic New York buildings in the illustration, that she was sort of like a Godzilla size, but she was the girl as well. And that was sort of my joke on that.
I think it's interesting because throughout, like, what's really important in art nowadays is that there's a huge Japanese influence. I mean, would you say some of the Japanese art is, how much of that is influenced through your doll art, or do you have any much, or would you be more of the anti-anime or anti-manga?
I'm certainly not anti-anime. I watch it from time to time, and I feel like the art moves me a lot. I don't know if I'm so educated in the culture. I mean, I definitely like I like to go to like the Kinokuniya bookstore And
we were just talking about that in a previous show. It's a really
oh,
good
yeah.
in the Manhattan.
No, I love
yes,
that bookstore.
I
always go through and look at. It's actually where I got my first doll making book. There's a Japanese doll making book called Yoshida Style Ball Jointed Doll Making, and this is before I was doing porcelain dolls, and I bought the book and taught myself to make a ball jointed doll by hand using like a Japanese paper clay called the doll. Just using the photo illustrations because I don't read Japanese, but the illustrations are so good you could kind of follow along, and I was able to sort of like complete a pretty good doll for someone who'd never made one before, to answer your question, yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of Japanese and Asian artists in general, and I certainly look at a lot of Asian ball jointed dolls. I mean, that's essentially the whole market. There's a few American ball jointed doll artists and some in Europe and Russia actually has quite a few ball jointed doll artists as well. But most of them are coming out of Asia. So you kind of have to pay attention to what's going on there. Every doll company has their sort of particular aesthetic they go for. But a lot of them definitely have that sort of anime face and, you know, really simplified nose and mouth and big eyes. And it's more about like posing the doll and sort of doing these dramatic anime type poses and that sort of stuff. You know, every doll is sort of trying to express the maker or the company's idea of what a perfect doll is.
What are your thoughts on the artist, Trevor Brown? Pilliter was mentioning him earlier.
Do you know of him?
I don't know if I'm familiar with him.
Well, Trevor Brown, he's kind of a controversial artist. He lives in Japan. He has a Japanese wife. But looking at your illustration and some of his art, Brown, he's controversial because he does like some of that doll work and the very Asian aesthetic. Mm-hmm. However, it's very he's into the whole avant-garde and violent stuff, and it's kind of shock art, and some of
right.
his art was used for one like infamous like punk band White House. It's just offensive, but I know your art is nothing like that.
Oh, is that Sotos's band?
Yeah. We had a previous episode on that, but according to Brown, it's like aesthetic wise, it seems to me that he's focusing on the sexual interest of that Asian figure or doll like figure, but it mm-hmm. seems to me that there's no sexual interest in your dolls, but it seems like people like Dave Cat would interpret it into a way where it could be sexual. And so otherwise, I mean, there is definitely a sexuality into that kind of avant-garde fine art where you look at, you know, how you have her, the big scissors, depending if you have that mm-hmm. macro sexuality yeah. thing going on. There's definitely things you can deconstruct and look at this in such way. But it seems to me that there's always yeah. this sexuality lingering between the figure and how do you want to present it as aesthetics, and how is that, you know, balance made.
Right. I mean, I definitely, especially with Pigeon in general, like I, not that she doesn't have a sexuality, but she's, I mean, it's, I'm kind of with her, in particular, I'm kind of, reflecting on my own childhood and my own ideas about dolls as a child. And there's this kind of innocence to her. So I like to kind of maintain that in her image per se, but you know, that said, you know, I being a fashion doll, and I like her to be a little bit edgy, you know, she'll wear latex, or, you know, I've done some pretty kooky stuff with the things that she's wearing, but there's always, it's definitely not about sexuality. She's an adult woman, and she, that's a part of her, but it's not how I think of her as an artist and as a creator of a fictional character, really. You know, she's, because she is a doll, she's very fluid, and I don't define her. She doesn't really have a backstory. It's not like she grew up here and she had a mom and a dad and she went to this school, or, you know, she's more of like a muse, or, you know, kind of like a spirit or an energy. But it's for the most part pretty wholesome.
Yes, you know, I there's a yeah. lot of lowbrow artists I like, and it's pretty much based upon innocence that I like. I mean, like, one artist I really like, he's around the he has some art in Philadelphia. His name is Kurt Halsey Fredrickson. He doesn't upload that much at all, but he just draws these really cutesy, innocent drawings. It's not like it's in the anime influence, but it's there, and it's one of those things that I liked when I was a teenager, and it's some art that I like too. But I know there's this whole edgy background where, like Brown's work, it's like you like it for the sake of just shock art, or you have some emotion or angst. And I feel though that it's very special that innocence is there, is especially what most people look up to anime and manga, is that there's, you know, those high school dramas or some kind of, it's about innocence. And I think that's a very important key to get someone's the
Or even
aesthetic wise.
something like a Pataliro, there's a sort of a doll-like quality to the character.
Pataleo is it's an old yaoi shoujo from late 70s. It's a manga that I like. It flirts with you know, the whole gender thing, where it's they're men but they're cross-dressing. There might be some child love here, but it's not pedophile-like. There is an RBL style to it. And something about
What is that one called?
Pathario. It's from 1977. There was an anime too, which I really said, and that was from 81. The anime is really great. It was by Toei. It's not known in the Western world. There's about like 15 episodes that have fan subs online. Pathario. It's a really great anime, but it definitely flirts with the aesthetic wise and ideal, and there's a lot to look at that. And yeah, there's definitely innocence in it, but it also flirts with art in that for sake, so.
Yeah, interesting. I'll have to check it out. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting having. I mean, I've in the past, probably just this year, I've started sort of like exploring making dolls that aren't Pigeon that I haven't really posted a lot about, and they're still kind of in development phase and all that sort of stuff. But it's been actually very liberating to. To create some other types of dolls and explore darker things and not even sexuality so much, but just sort of like a maturity that just isn't sort of part of Pigeon's vibe that that I'm very excited about moving forward and that sort of stuff. And it's also really kind of like helped me define who Pigeon is, that she can be this thing and she represents this sort of like quirky, cool girl innocence. And I can, as a artist, you know, kind of keep making dolls and have them evolve as I mature as well, sort of thing. So that's been kind of an interesting thing that's been happening recently. But
With the marketing, do you go after a sort of a niche audience, or do you th not really, or you just focus on your work and as opposed to f thinking about the marketing?
That's kind of an interesting question. It's a little bit of both. You know, I some days I feel like I just want to make the dolls that I want to make, and if people like them or don't like them, that's kind of their decision. Because well, when I started making dolls, the attention that I got from them via social media was definitely because they were coming from like a very personal place, and I think that people were picking up on that. But that said, now that I've been doing Pigeon now for about 4 years, I and also like because I've had this really great interaction with her fan base, where they're creating fan art and they're kind of telling me about the things that like about her that they find distinctive and that resonate with them. I'm a little less I'm feeling less able to change like to change that. Like I feel like her vibe is kind of set, and of course as the world turns and everything changes, she'll keep evolving. But I definitely feel a responsibility to the people that know her as a character and want to interact with her, not to change her too much.
That's always the thing with the art. There's sort of the vision of the artist, but then other people are going to have their own interpretations of the work.
Yeah, and you kind of, it's a balancing act. You know, you have to you have to you know, you want your audience and you want your audience to like what you're doing, you can't just create the, you know, just what you want to. Like, nobody wants to lose their audience or to have that change. So you want to pay attention to that. But
I was just saying that found you on the shirt website Print All Over Me, and that was I found you through your art rather than your dolls. I had no idea that you made dolls, and I thought that was interesting because what I like to do personally, like when I go fashion shopping, I'll just go all out and go on a Print All Over Me and just buy the most bizarre looking like $40-$30 shirt and just have these vaporwave designs on them with fun stuff. And, you know, it's funny because there's a market where you can literally get what you want as a consumer in whatever pretty art picture you want on it. And it just reminds me that, you know, with your dolls, you're doing this whole design thing. And now it's on, you know, Print All Over Me. It seems to me there's that whole, you just want like the image, and it's no longer a dictatorship where I'm an artist, you get my art. And then it seemed like the consumer decides what the art wants, kind of like a Facebook page that you make or something. I find that really interesting.
Yeah, no, it's super interesting. It's, I'm really excited about the Print All Over Me collaboration. We launched the mini collaboration last week, which was like, I think, four of the designs that we did, but we did a total of 15 that we're going to probably launch in January. But it was really fun to think about. Pigeon is not just like a doll, an art doll that I make in an art piece, but think about her as sort of a brandable character. And like also the idea of like, you know, when I was creating the collection, Pigeon has all these fans and they expect a certain aesthetic from her. And like, what is it? Not most of them don't own a Pigeon doll. Like, they, you know, Pigeon is an art doll, so she's very expensive, and that's a complete luxury item that a lot of people can't afford in their life. So but they still want to interact with her and be part of this in some way, be part of what I'm doing. So, you know, having a way to take a doll and then be able to wear it was a really fun thing to explore as an artist. And how to, you know, I love faces, so it's all about taking this doll face and making repeats with it and making you know, just graphics with it and making it wearable. So it's really bold, and you have that sort of,
there's an attitude to it where it's like, yeah. I always get this too with some of the clothings. I have some like, you know, like band t-shirts or whatnot, but even the, like those designer t-shirts is like girls' faces all over it. It could reflect, you know, somebody not know who your art is. It's just like an interesting thing where it's like, oh, these are the kind of girls are like, or no, it's like girlfriend you have, or, you know, there's a lot of meaning that could be pried into it. I'm just making up
Absolutely,
stuff.
Yeah.
It's interesting to note that, and not to say that's like sexual or anything, but once again, there's a lot of meaning between putting a doll's face compared to the physical doll.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, this thing on, I think the site is observer.com. This woman, Do Dore, she had a pigeon doll, and then there's a picture of her dressed like exactly like her pigeon doll.
Yeah, that was a. Are you familiar with the artist Richard Prince?
No.
He's a. What is it called? I'm blanking right now on what it's called, but he basically takes other people's art and does a twist on it, or not really a twist at all, and just kind of slaps his name on it. And the word is appropriation. He's an appropriation artist. So he's been doing this since the 70s, and he did a show. I guess it was probably 2 years ago at this point, maybe just a year ago. I think it was two years ago, where he took people's Instagram photos and did a whole gallery show where he basically just reprinted their Instagram handle with their name and the comments under it, and sold them for like $100,000. Like, he has quite a following, so he was able to command quite a large sum for them. And one of the images that he took was a piece of fan art of Pigeon from her Instagram. It's she's actually a friend of mine. Her name is Doe Deer, and she dressed Pigeon for Halloween. So she had a Pigeon doll, and she dressed as it, and that was her picture. And he took it, and because that image was kind of like, I think, the kookiest one, because most of the pictures that he took appropriated from people were just hot 20-somethings being flirty with the camera, and that one was kind of weird and kooky because, like, why does she have this doll? That became kind of the face of the controversy. So people were talking about, like, is this appropriation or is this just stealing? And that particular image was on the cover of Fortune magazine, and I was interviewed a few times, and I went on TV to talk about it and just talk about the him as an artist and how it felt to be appropriated by him. But I was kind of in a strange place because it wasn't my Instagram photo. Like, I didn't take that photo and I made the doll, but he did delete the caption that gave me the credit. So fortunately I had enough of a voice, media speaking, that I was able to sort of speak up about it and get credit. And I think it actually, like, the end of the day ended up being a good thing for me, because it's always hard to have my doll, or just dolls in general, be in a conversation about real art. You know, a lot of people consider dolls to be sort of primitive or just like a craft, not really so much of an art expression. So it was a good thing for me to have my doll put in this conversation about art and what is art and that sort of thing. But it was really kind of surreal, the whole thing that happened. It was it'll happen over like 3 or 4 weeks, and it was quite a whirlwind.
Have you ever been to Japan or Asia?
I have. I've been to Japan and I've been to Thailand.
Where do you get fans over there about your art, or is there any Japanese fans about your dolls?
Not so. I think there's a little bit of it, but I really haven't figured out how to tap into that in general, because of the language barrier, and because I was there, but I was only there for like 3 days, and so it's a pretty I was in Tokyo. It's a pretty complicated city, and I'm not quite sure how to penetrate that. I feel like I would do well, and I think that the pigeon and my art in general would do well in Asia, but I wouldn't say that I have a strongest fan base there yet.
I'm surprised.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just surprised, is because your art would, especially the dolls, would be something loved by, you know, any of even Chinese or Japanese or in the Korean area. It's just something that would sell if you had the right marketing. I mean, thinking about the whole doll thing, I mean, if you look at Western influences about, you know, the aesthetics of Japan, I was just thinking earlier today, there was this big controversy, I think it was a few years ago, about Avril Lavigne's Hello Kitty music video. Have you seen that? It's basically
I did.
It's a stereotype, mock Japanese stereotypes and how Westerners see the Japan. And it's just like, they all look like doll girls and they all dance around to some kawaii whatever. The same thing is with Gwen Stefani, where she does this, I don't want to use the word doll, but the aesthetic-wise of dressing up in this whole idol costume and doing performances. But at the same time, it's like, even though that may be a stereotype, it does sell really well in Asian countries. And it seems to me there, how do you, like, make your art more meaningful if you don't want to make it like a stereotype, you know?
Right. I mean, I don't think that... I don't know. I mean, I think it's very interesting, the idea of, like, wanting to be a doll or wanting to look like a doll. You know, I've definitely encountered that just in, you know, the American following that I have. You know, there's, I think the number one type of fan art that I get are people doing makeup to look like my doll, and they wear contacts and they paint their face really, you know, like really, very porcelain, and they just amplify everything. And there's this desire that a lot of people have to look like a doll. And I don't know. I don't necessarily see that as being negative or being fake. I think it's a kind of dress up, and it's a,
I think, an I ideal.
Yeah.
I do like some Asian fashion. I used to take Asian studies, and I learned about this one figure named, Sayoko Yamaguchi. Do you know about her? She was she was like one of the first Japanese models in the fashion industry of the world. She died in 2007, but she's like, you know,
where's most of her work from?
She did some movies, but they're kind of not they're not known in the West. I think there is some subtitle films, but she has this very I don't want to use the word Oriental, but it's this foreign style where she likes to don like black hair a lot, but she does have maybe an art, like I would say it's psychedelic, very colorful in some of her films, like in Pistol Opera, which I remember seeing. It's like very colorful, very of I don't know what the word is, but I really like Yamaguchi's figure. It just leaves something of this really impression that it's very uniquely Japanese, but also her own style, where I feel like other Japanese cannot do Yamaguchi's style, but I feel as though that it left a huge influential mark upon the world, and including in fashion, where it seems to be on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of the mark of any true artist is, you know, you can't help it but be influenced by your surroundings and the things you're inspired by, and to be able to sort of take from those things and then make them very distinctively your own is a more rare thing, I think.
Yeah, because I would think of Yamaguchi being more authentic than Gwen Stefani, just for aesthetic reason wise.
Right.
Not to say that, not bashing on her, but it's just to say that there's something with Yamaguchi that seems more real and authentic to her image.
Well,
and something
that's yeah.
Have you thought about like a mass producing your dolls? And I mean, you could make a profit because a lot of people would want a cheaper version. But
yeah,
then at the same time, the dolls would kind of lose their sense of uniqueness. And this kind of ties in with the whole debate of like a profit versus like artistic integrity.
Yeah, it's a tough call. I mean, I guess it depends on like what tier of mass produced I would fall under. I mean, to be where I'm at right now, where I'm hand making every doll and painting them and making the wigs and working with people to do the garments and, you know, to have it be such, it's a lovely luxury, and I'm very happy to have collectors that support me and support my work. But you know, ultimately, it's not really like a great career choice financially. You know, it's not really going to sustain me. So if what I want to do essentially is sort of create a doll that can be other things, not just a doll. Like it's more of like a lifestyle brand that's about the character of a doll or something like that. You know, it's taking the art and taking the aesthetic and trying to, you know, and Print Over Me is definitely like sort of my first step in that direction of taking this idea of a doll and something that's very personal to me and this character that is Pigeon and finding out other ways to have her exist and have people be able to interact with her that aren't owning physical dolls. But yeah, I mean, to answer your question, I'd be open to the idea, but I would never want like to make a cheap doll that's sold at Target either. It's not really my intention to like be on par with Barbie or Monster High or something. You know,
Did you do a collaboration with Teen Vogue, I think it was? I was just looking at your website, or it was a fan website. No, I think it was your website, Teen Vogue. Did you do one with collaboration with?
Yeah, no, I've done, that was when I was, oh, yeah, you know what, you're right, I forgot. I did, yeah, I did a collaboration with just Condé Nast in general, the publisher that does Teen Vogue. And they wanted to do a video where they took five Brooklyn artists and had them paint nails based on their art. So they had like a photographer and they had a sculptor and they had a crochet artist, and each person did a nail on a model that sort of reflected their art, and it was supposed to be sort of like what if nail art was gallery art sort of thing. And they asked me to do it, and they're like, how would you put a doll on a fingernail? But I misunderstood the assignment, and I thought that I had the whole hand to do the doll on. So I created this concept basically where like her face, there were four different faces on her fingers, and then her her thumb would be a body, and so she could sort of switch heads, and you could sort of play dress up doll on your fingers. And I ended up having to only paint one nail for that particular job, which was for Glamour magazine. But they liked the concept of my doll nails so much that they brought me in to do my own video for Teen Vogue. And so that's what that ended up being. So it was a 10-part nail art. And I had to, like, I'd never done nail art before. So I went to the dollar store around the corner from my house and bought all these fake nails. And I just, like, practiced painting nails for...
Interesting.
For a few days, yeah, before I went in there to film.
That's interesting compared to that you just mentioned Target, where there is that audience in Teen Vogue where you could get maybe teenage girls to be interested in your art. Compared to, like,
yeah,
if you have, you know, mainstream, like, mass production, it seems to me that is the most lucrative if you were to do something like Walmart or Target. But at the same time, there's this level, I guess, of integrity where you would like your art to be well-known, but you wouldn't want your
right.
art to be mass-produced or just, like, because it diminishes the value of someone has a relationship with your art or something of that.
Right. Well, I mean, I think the thing about dolls in our society and kind of what, even what I do is kind of a reaction to this is the idea of a doll to me is so special. I wasn't allowed to play with them as a child, and I grew up in this religious household, and so the fact that I'm even making dolls that are expensive and special and take a lot of time to make is sort of a reflection of the fact that I love the idea of a doll so much that I think it's something that should be treasured and should be part of somebody's life and should be, and, you know, of an heirloom quality, you know? And,
I used to have stuffed animals before bed. I had Peapod, Seymour, and there were two seals, and I would sleep with them until I was 10. But I'm saying that
Oh, go ahead, sorry.
No, I was just saying that I had, well, not actual physical dolls, but like animals, stuffed animals that
right.
I would go to bed
yeah,
with.
Yeah.
And I feel like if you were to have that mission to have someone with a doll for life, it's going to be when it starts young, maybe when someone's like 5 or 6 year old and they physically are conscious with, let's say someone gets one of your dolls and finds
right.
a relationship, either boy or girl finding that relationship, you know, how's that to bloom?
Yeah. And it's, you know, my MO is not to make dolls for children necessarily. Like, it's not, as I said,
pigeon has sort of innocence too, and I always, also too fragile for children, like they might break.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, especially the doll that I'm making. I'm working on one that's a little more durable that I'll hopefully have a prototype for in a month or two. But the doll that I'm currently making, she's essentially like a Barbie size. She's about 12 inches tall, but she has like articulated fingers, and she's very jointed, and it's very just very fragile. It's not very, very fragile, but definitely not intended for children to play with. And you know, she's hand cast in resin, and everything about her is handmade, so she's also at a price point that you wouldn't really give it to a kid. So what I was saying before is, like, I just feel that dolls should be something really special. So I think there's a middle ground to reach at as far as, like, mass producing. You were kind of talking about Blythe dolls earlier, which is, like, you know, they're a mass-produced doll, but they really have a quality to them, and they're made in Japan, and so it's sort of there's a different attitude towards dolls in general in Asia, which is much much more adult-friendly, and there's a quality level that just is not here.
I think
in the States. So
I think the toy culture is seething through here with, you know, Nintendo's doing it, their whole Amiibos. And I think before, like, video gamers who would play Nintendo games are now being forced to buy Nintendo's Amiibos, where there's, like, Mario, Donkey Kong, and then having, like, strange connections with that or getting into some weird infiltration of toy culture. But, like I said, it's funny because that's, like, an Americanized version that's happening through Nintendo.
I've also noticed kind of a change in the culture where it's become more acceptable for adults to have interests that maybe in the past would be kind of associated as, like, children's things. Like, adults are playing video games, but in the past, like, if you're an adult, you're kind of expected to have certain things and not do certain things.
Absolutely, yeah. No, I mean, and I think in general, like with toys in general and the adult toy market, you know, I have a friend who's at school studying toy design, and apparently, like, it's a big issue in the toy industry in general, at least in the U.S., where, like, young children don't even want physical toys anymore. Like, everybody wants iPad games and video, you know, everyone's in this virtual world that it's getting harder and harder for them to sell physical toys. So I feel like the adult toy market is kind of where the only people that really appreciate toys are adults these days. No, not completely, but I think it's a trend where, you know, you give a kid a toy or a toy car or something, and they don't, you know, it's not as exciting as a video game that'll explode in your face and make sound and do all this stuff. So
I've been obsessed with the whole Kenner toys. They're like these things, you could find them everywhere, but it's like, I think it's by Funko, and it's basically, they reintroduce Kenner toys as, like, I think it's called Reaction. And so they'll get, like, movies mm-hmm. like, I'm seeing one in my room right now, Alien, and you don't open the package, you just hang it up on your wall as, like, furniture. So there'll be, like, Pulp Fiction, it'll be that one character in Pulp Fiction, you hang it up, or, like, Nightmare Before Christmas, or some mm-hmm. kind of funny, The Goonies, and some kind of, and you put it up, it looks like a vintage toy from, like, 70 something, but it's made today in 2016. You hang it up on your wall, wow. You don't open it, and it's just, it's a yeah. funny, interesting way to use toys as this nostalgic furniture piece. I became kind of obsessed with it. They don't really have resale value because they're always $10. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they'll go up in price, but it's this ideal that you own something vintage, then you put it in your room as, like, you could have I have a synthesizer down here, and then I see the little alien reaction figure just hanging up as if, like, I own something of the past.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I think the nostalgia toy thing is a big part, and I think probably the reason a market for what I do exists is because people, you know, people grow up and they are adults and they want a doll, but they want a doll that is as complicated as an adult is, you know, and I think that I don't know, it's very interesting how many people collect toys and just want, you know, just that want to refer back to your childhood and sort of reflect on that time and to have the things that maybe you couldn't have when you were that age, or, you know, it's kind of like having ice cream for dinner and that sort of, you know, stuff you can do as an adult that you couldn't necessarily do as a kid.
I mean, I would get, like, I don't know of any, like, kid robot vinyl toys today, but I remember just, like, 10 years ago, just, like, again, like, the fun factor was just opening it up, like, trading cards, like Magic the Gathering or Pokemon. Mm-hmm. You would just open it up and you would get a random sort of cards. But for vinyl toys, it was like that way where it's like the rarity was like common, one of 100, and it's like one of 15. And when you get it, it's like there is that vinyl smell to it, or there's this kind of strange yeah. where it's like, it's cool because it looks like it's so unique or something you could put aside as, you know, again, as furniture. But I see the fun mm-hmm. factor in that point. Like 10 years ago, they still do it today with more mainstream things. I sometimes see them, but I know some people do get resale value if you're a good collector and you could put it up on eBay. But then again, I feel like there is that culture between collecting, and it's also like, to use a weird comparison, like shoe collecting, like the whole sneakerhead like thing where it's like, oh, I got these rare Jordans I got on this day. They, you know, they're pretty, they're orange, they're blue. It's I don't collect fancy sneakers, but it has that same hobbyist, but interested in this new yeah. fine art that's kind of, I don't know if I should use the word lowbrow, but it's like art that people and consumers make up and kind of are a part of its own inner consumer culture.
Yeah, definitely. That's interesting. Yeah, no, I mean, I that definitely exists within the doll world and the collecting world. You know, it's, I feel like there's definitely a big divide between like the, you know, what we're talking about, the adult toy collecting world and the doll collecting world, because just kind of like one is feminine and one tends to be a little more like on the masculine side. And so the audience tends to have that divide between them. But I think that there's a lot of similarities in the two groups of people, and sort of wanting to have those things that they didn't have when they were young, and wanting to, I don't know, just kind of like satisfy those wants that they, I guess, never quenched, you know.
You know, like I said, I do have Kurt Halsey prints, and I just put them in this like little. I also do collect comic books for some reason, I just put them in this box in the corner. And sometimes I'll use eBay to resell it, but then again, it's like more of the habit of collecting. And there is this kind of materialistic thing going on where it's like the point is, well, your dolls are trying to make a relationship with the viewer who gets it. Compared to if you have like an income and you're collecting art for like the sake of being a hoarder, it kind of ruins that. Like I feel as though that I'm
like the kind of the debate about quality versus a quantity. If you have a small number of items and they're of a high quality, they become very special to you. But if you're like a hoarder and you have all this stuff, then the stuff kind of like you don't want to let go. On one hand, you don't want to let go of it, but it doesn't.
Yeah.
It kind of loses its unique specialness.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like collecting can definitely be an addiction. I think I would definitely be more prone to it had I not moved to New York and lived in very small apartments from all my adult life. That I really just did not have the ability to collect things. As a kid, I definitely did. I collected Star Trek figurines, and I collected trolls, and I collected, you know, I had all these different collections of things. I definitely sort of understand that, and I think that speaks to my nature, but I was sort of forced to learn how to be a minimalist. More, I mean, I'm certainly not a minimalist. I have a lot of stuff, but it's all stuff that I'm working on as opposed to just finding, which I don't know. I feel like also I kind of miss out on a lot of stuff. You know, I think the fact that I kind of stay in this little insular world, and everything that I'm interacting with are things that I'm making. And the only time I'm seeing what's going on in the outside world is mostly on the internet, has its advantages and disadvantages.
Do you interact a lot with other artists and the art scene, or you're more just focused on your own work?
I certainly know all the doll artists in the world, or not in the world, but definitely in New York and in the U.S. probably. It's a pretty small community of people. There's one doll artist that I shared a studio with before I was doing Pigeon, but when I was just starting to get interested in doll making. And he does large high fashion rag dolls. And we kind of shared a space together, and kind of introduced me a lot to doll culture. You know, I think, as I mentioned earlier, I grew up in a really conservative household, and I wasn't allowed to play with dolls, and I didn't know a lot about them. Like, my sisters had Barbie dolls, and I could kind of gaze at them from afar, but I certainly didn't know about like adult doll collecting. And so when I started being interested in dolls, I kind of had to learn a lot about the dolls that had come before me and the way dolls used to be and the sizing differences. And it was a very learn by fire situation. And now I have another friend in New York named Pasha Satova, who's a brilliant doll artist. And it's nice to have like one other friend that you can kind of share tips with and that sort of stuff. But I don't know. I know other artists, but I'm certainly not really part of a gallery scene or anything like that. It's being a doll artist, I feel like there's a lot of it's changing slowly, but there's a lot of prejudice about it. I feel like it's not very respected, in a gallery context, because I don't know if there's a lot of artists that have really elevated it to that level where it really belongs in a gallery anyway, but. I do know a lot.
I always think of like galleries. There's all kinds of like performance artists. Like, mm-hmm. It's kind of a cliche, but there was like some period where they were doing really wacky stuff, like spray painting like urinals and putting them in the galleries.
Yeah.
If I was to say one more thing about your dolls, I think if there's anything I do like about your dolls is that it really gives me nostalgic feelings that I know you've referenced this before, that you actually kind of know the people, or that the doll does manifest a character that's real. It's funny because I forget what doll. I was looking at this one doll in one of the galleries I friend, and it just gave me a nostalgic feeling of a girlfriend I have. I know it sounds a little cheesy, but it just reminds me that if there was a sentimental value between me and your dolls, it's the fact that it reminds me of someone I actually loved in my life. And it makes me think that maybe in some respect, your dolls basically form relationship with you and the viewer, and that somebody likes dolls because it's almost a romantic feeling of really expression about one's own self. And if I was to express my feelings to your dolls, I would probably order a doll, not to be creepy or anything, a doll that looks like a girlfriend I once dated or something funny.
Well, you know, I think that in a lot of languages, the word of doll and the word puppet are very kind of interchangeable, and nobody really uses that in English so much. But, you know, a puppet is an inanimate object used to emote and to express, and kind of what we think of as a doll is something that kind of stands there and just sort of looks pretty or whatever, you know. And what I'm interested in, what interests me about dolls, is taking this inanimate object and using that to express my own feminine energy. Like Pigeon to me is sort of a big side of myself that is feminine that I don't express in my physical self. I've always had this sort of feminine interest in the way in my drawings and the things that I'm sort of attracted to. Entertainment-wise, and the doll is this really perfect way for me to express that. And so that's why I was sort of talking about, as the doll was evolving, and I would put in more joints and photograph her in different ways. And I would, you know, the more I did it, the more, you know, making her feel real and making it feel not like a real person. It's not about having her be like, oh, I didn't even know that was a doll. Like, it's not about that, but it's about how you can make the doll look like she's sad or emotive, or like she reminds you of somebody. It's nice, like that, you know, that there's a humanity there, and that's what I'm trying to express with it artistically. There's a lot of different sides to doing what I do in doll art, but you know, ultimately, I think that what resonates with me, that the art part of it is definitely taking this doll or this puppet and having that sort of that illusion of, like, even though this is not a real thing that lives and breathes and thinks, it you are kind of fooled enough to where it makes you feel something. And that's exciting for me. That's what I like hearing.
We are at the end of the show. It's been a really excellent show. Recommend everyone check out Joshua's work. I'd like to thank you for being on.
Thank you for having me.
And also thanks, Pill Eater, for being on.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.